It's playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing, and FanDuel is your place to bet on every game. Right now, brand new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. $150, win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks, and all on an app that's safe, secure, and easy to use. I don't know what you're waiting for. Go to FanDuel.com/Hardy. Make your first bet an automatic win with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook.
21 plus and present in Massachusetts. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Hope is here. Gambling helpline ma.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234.
All things Bruins and the NHL. It's the Hockey Show on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Welcome in to another edition of the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Every Saturday morning, we get together from 9 until 11, talk about everything Bruins, NHL, and a lot more. 617-779-0985, of course, is the number to join us here in the Town Fair Tire Studios. Ryan Johnston, joined by Judd Surratt and Bob Beers. Morning, guys.
Morning.
Good to see you.
Good morning.
Got a couple of games left before a nice long 9-day break, and
got a break coming up.
Something like that. Anybody got plans? wouldn't blame me if you did. Boy, an eventful week around this team. Obviously, the road trip last weekend and into this week was an interesting one. The games at the Island, at Philly, at Columbus, and then come back home for the win over Pittsburgh on Thursday night. And so much was made this week about the level of toughness on this team.
How'd I know you were going to start there?
I mean, it's the story of the week around here. After Tuukka Rask got knocked out of that Columbus game, the reaction or lack thereof took a lot of, you know, the team took a lot of heat for that. They came back and played a physical game and dialed it up against Pittsburgh, and they won. Overblown? Serious problem with this team? I mean, it was a question that actually came up on this show last week was, you know, does this team need more of a physical presence? Because they've had some incidents where it felt like they maybe haven't responded the way you'd like to see them when certain guys have been hit, certain guys have been hurt, whatever it might be.
Yeah, so if you just want to go back to the isolated one, and that's Columbus, right? Mm. You know, Rask gets hit. Did the guy, Benstrom, did he intend to do it? No. Did he try to get out of the way? No. And so when the guys saw it, and they saw it in the locker room after the first period, because nobody saw it when it first happened. I didn't see it when it first happened.
Yeah.
I have to go back on the replay. It was behind the play. You know, Carlo tried to address it. Nordstrom tried to address it. And as a player, if he could have Zach Cassian'd him, right?
Whether he wants to answer or not, right, you're going to make him answer. Yeah.
Just grabbed him and started throwing punches. You could have done that and take a 2-game suspension because that's what the precedent was set with Cassian. But if you don't go that route, so, you know, what are your other options, right? If you really want to answer for it, well, I mean, to me, it's just going to the net hard. And if you make contact with that other goaltender, so be it.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that's kind of the old school, but I think it still applies. I really do. I know that the game has changed. I know it's a little different now, but it's either you kind of go after one of their skilled guys, or because it's the goaltender, because it's Rask. You go after him, and I'm not saying to go, and I'm not saying to elbow, I'm not saying to just, but if you have an opportunity to go to the net hard, and there's some contact made, well, that's part of the game. And if the kid answers for it, then it's over.
Right.
But once he said no, hey, then it's free game. Or fair game, I should say. You know, you go to the net hard. So that's I think that was disappointing in that sense. That didn't happen. But really happy about the way that they played against Pittsburgh. And it was evident that there was a message sent by somebody, whether it was coaches, whether it was the leaders, whether it was just the players themselves taking it upon themselves. I mean, when the first hit was thrown there by Charlie McAvoy on Tanev, you knew that this team was engaged. Mm-hmm. And they were already down 1-0 at the time, yeah. But you knew this team was engaged.
And that was the thing that Patrice Bergeron talked about with us after the game, that the way they played against the Penguins versus maybe a lot of what we saw against the Jackets, it was about a mentality.
What did Bruce Cassidy say? We had a different kind of meeting today.
Yeah. He said, you know, there wasn't a challenge laid out there, but it was clear that they had addressed it.
Well, Sean Corrali, so on in the intermission with us, the same type of question was posed to him, and he basically said, and this is sort of the gist that I'm getting, was either the message from the leadership in the room or the coaching staff, that the Bruins have a certain expectation about the way that they need to play, and they hadn't been meeting that. They met that the other night.
Yeah, you know, it is about a mentality, and I do think that, you know, we're halfway through the season, just beyond halfway point of the season, kind of in first place. It's kind of like now, the Islander game didn't feel like that, mm-hmm. You know, and a couple of the other games before that, they had won 3 in a row. The Islander game was 3 wins in a row. The Flyer game had that feeling. The Columbus game had that feeling. It's just kind of, we're halfway through the season and we're in first place. And I don't want to say complacency, but maybe.
But it's kind of human nature.
Yeah,
I mean, in an 82-game season where things have gone pretty well for you and you're in first place,
I think
there's a human nature to let down a little bit along the way.
When this team is challenged, they answer. I really do. You can question how they handled things. But the way they played against Pittsburgh was, you know, they can answer the challenge. They can. They have it in them. If they're pushed, they can push back. So I don't think, I mean, you know, when you say, are they tough enough? Yeah, I do. I think that they are. I think that as a pack that they are. But they have to be, sometimes it's, you kind of has to be reminded. You know what I mean? And I think that Columbus game reminded them, and maybe, you know, what was written and what was talked about maybe reminded them, and then they showed it against Pittsburgh.
To me, it's so fascinating because all of a sudden, these things now start to pop up in other markets.
What were you telling me? Pittsburgh was saying the same thing after the
I've got the quotes from Mike Sullivan, because all of a sudden, so the Bruins, they outplayed the Penguins the other night. And so... so now some of the headlines and some of the questions that are focused toward Mike Sullivan and the Penguins, well, do we have to worry about toughness on our team? Is this an issue? Like, I've got the quotes from Mike Sullivan where he talks about, oh, okay, maybe we need to differentiate physicality and toughness and what that is all about. But all of a sudden, that performance against the Bruins the other night sent a ripple through the Pittsburgh Penguins. So I think we sometimes get confused about what physicality and toughness are all about, what style is all about. Like, if you want to have a discussion, I think, with general managers, whether it's the Penguins, Jimmy Rutherford, or Don Sweeney, about, okay, do we need to get bigger?
Mm-hmm.
Versus do we need more physicality? Do we need a style change? Do we need to forecheck more effectively? Less east-west plays? I think that that's a discussion that general managers and coaches are willing to have. But I think to go down the road of questioning the Bruins' toughness or the Penguins' toughness, I think that we've missed the mark.
I think the bigger thing for me is, you know, because some people point to, well, you know, they lost to a physical team in St. Louis last year in the postseason. And, you know, they lost
game 7 because they couldn't score in the first period.
I get it.
That's why they lost.
But
why they lost the finals. They They couldn't score in the first period when they had all kinds of chances against Binnington. And then there was a bad goal scored with less than 10 seconds to go that put them down 2-0. That's why they lost in the finals last year.
I think there's some revisionist history when we think about last year.
Yeah.
And what was happening. Think about the guys who scored in Game 7 for St. Louis. O'Reilly, Petrangelo, Shen. And that was sort of emblematic of the difference in the series, that their better players were better than your better players across the 7 games. They had a slight edge. They won it.
I think over and above that, though, you know, as far as, because I'm not worried about this team matching up in that way with a team that, you know, that brings a physical style, because like you said, more often than not, they can match that if they're challenged. I think the bigger concern for me is that we have seen guys not respond in the moment at times when somebody gets run, or, you know, as you said, even the response,
for example,
even the response to Bemstrom the other night was,
well, we already addressed that.
I understand. It just, if Nordstrom is the guy who's kind of going up there and just kind of, you know, giving him a tap and saying,
who do you want? You think he's going to fight Chara?
What's he supposed to do? What's Nordstrom supposed to do?
I mean,
he did exactly what he's supposed to do.
Okay. I'm maybe more of the,
he's not going to fight Nordstrom. He's not going to fight Chara. So
more of the Cassian school then.
I mean, like I said, that's an option. If you want to take the 2-game suspension,
but
that's
I don't think that's
an option.
I don't think you have that guy on this team either, and I don't think you need that.
You do have guys that can clearly do that on this team.
I disagree.
That's not the case whatsoever. But to Bob's point, I think the question was, okay, once Bemstrom was issued the challenge by multiple guys, Joakim Nordstrom has what, like four penalty minutes during the course of the season?
Do you want a Sean Thornton situation? And I don't blame Thorny for it at all. Brooks Orpik?
Right.
Where he goes and grabs him, and now you're suspended for 20 games, you know, because of what happened there. I mean, Orpik throws a high late hit on Louis Erickson, and Thorny goes and grabs him. I mean, is that that's what you're looking at? I mean, that's what you're asking for. No. I understand what Cassian did. He got hit multiple times by Tkachuk. He got run multiple times by Tkachuk, and he took it into his own hands. Unfortunately, it wasn't worse, but that's what you're looking at. This is what you're asking for. No. You ask the guy. If he says no, then you take other measures.
Which they didn't, though.
Exactly. I already addressed that.
Yep.
Already addressed that. And don't you think that their response against Pittsburgh was that there was a message delivered?
Well, I hope so. But we won't know that until the next time it happens. And see how they respond the next time.
I think we're making way too much out of it. I really do. I the game has changed. It's changed a lot. There's certain things that are still in place, but the game's changed a lot. Could they use more? You can always use more toughness as long as the guy can play. You can always use a little bit more attitude as long as the guy can play. And I'll take that anytime in my lineup. But I think that this team, I don't see it in this team. I don't see what people are talking about as far as lack of toughness. I don't see that in this team.
Yeah, there's no character issue. I thought it was fascinating. So in the coaches show with us, Bruce Cassidy had mentioned that he felt that he has plenty of guys that are willing to jump into the fire. But what I think that he was looking for at this juncture of the season at certain times was someone who could ignite that spark. And that's why all of a sudden the name of a guy like Anton Bleed has started to churn up here in the last couple of days. And it certainly sounds like he could be back in the lineup at some point once he is healthy and once he is ready, that there are certain points of the season that you want guys who can pull your team into the battle, because the Bruins feel like they have plenty of guys who are willing to go into battle. It's trying to ignite that spark.
Right. It's setting the tone as opposed to responding to the other team. Setting the tone.
In
right?
some ways, you could argue that Charlie McAvoy brought the Bruins into that battle. So 24 seconds in, you're down 1-0. Then he pastes Brandon Tanev with a clean check. Boom, we've got a game.
617-779-0985. We'll take your calls on that and other things throughout the course of the next couple of hours. I want to get into some of the personnel decisions made this week. Obviously, David Backes going on to waivers yesterday, a big one. We'll talk a little bit about the rest of these games and the way the teams played over the course of the last week as well. 617-779-0985 as we get started here on this week's Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Shoots and rims, flashed up the glove, take it away.
It's the Hockey Show.
Centered, fired, they score.
On 98.5, the Sports Hub. It's streaming on the Sports Hub app.
Sports Hub Hockey Show continues. 617-779-0985. Ryan Johnston with Judd Zerot and Bob Beers here in the Town Fair Tire Studios. Let's get to some of your calls here. We got Maria in Watertown up first. Good morning, Maria.
Hi, good morning. I know it seems like this topic of toughness is grating on everyone's nerves. So the only thing that I want to say about it, and maybe I'm old school and archaic when it comes to this, but as far as I'm concerned, when someone does that to your goalie, whether or not it's accidentally on purpose, I don't care who answers the bell for it, but somebody needs to go after someone because you simply cannot allow that to happen to your goaltender of all people. And that's all I want to say about that. The other thing I want to say is, I do need to give Donnie Sweeney some credit because it must have been extremely difficult to make some of the decisions that he had to make this week, particularly with regard to David Backes. And I'm sure this is not how he anticipated his career here in Boston would go. But, I think Donnie's doing hopefully what's in the best interest of the team to shore up this group. And then quickly on the Flyers game and yet another collapse of a lead. When do we look at Bruce Cassidy with regard to criticism for that and not having the guys ready to play 60 full minutes on a consistent basis? Because I think that's a problem for this team. And not, when you're watching your team unraveling in front of you, if I can see it at home on TV, he's got to see it from the bench. I know he benched Grizzlick, but there has to be a more concrete message that he can send to his players to wake them up when that is happening, because that cannot happen to a quality playoff contending team. Thanks for the time, guys.
All right, appreciate the call, Maria. We'll get into the personnel moves and Backes and all that coming up, but the Philadelphia game, they blow a 5-2 lead.
Yeah, that was more disappointing, I think, than Columbus. In some ways, you had a 5-2 lead, and you did a lot of good things in the first half of the game, and then you got away from a lot of it. So that one was really tough to take. They followed up with the Columbus game, obviously, but you get a 5-2 lead on the road, against the Flyers. That one was really disappointing. They really got away from their game, and the Flyers had something to say about it. But it's happened a couple times this year, and they've given up some of those leads. And the Florida game was the 4-0 lead, and they came back, and Florida came back and won. There's been some other games where you've had leads going into the third period and haven't been able to close them out. So for as many good things about Pittsburgh, the battles that they won, one-on-one battles throughout the game, the physicality, Torrey Krug stepping up the way that he did, all that. They also had a one-goal lead going into the third period, and they extended it. Mm-hmm. So to me, that was Bergeron's goal, and then the empty netter. So that was almost on the level of bringing the compete level, but I think it goes hand in hand as well.
But I think what really struck a chord, I think, in that game was that the Bruins pride themselves in how they defend and how they defend specifically in front of their own net. And yes, the Flyers were able to forge their way back into the game because Patrice Bergeron, a number of guys admitted, listen, we sat back, we can't do that. That has certainly happened, and the Flyers were coming, but it was the way that they – that they defended out in front of the goaltender at that point that really, I think, struck a nerve with the team.
Well, Bruce Cassidy used the word unprofessional after the game. When he talked about the team's defensive effort in the third period of that game, he called it unprofessional.
He didn't back off that the next day either.
No. And well, that's, in part, and putting the rest of it aside against Columbus, I thought it was kind of a disappointing effort, the night after. And granted, it's a back-to-back on the road. It's not an easy situation, and Columbus, is playing you hard. But, coming off of that, I thought maybe the team would come out a little stronger. It just turned into a weird night. Tuukka gets knocked out like a minute into the game, and it was not the game that I was hoping to see.
Listen, that was a pretty good effort, I thought, until you hit the third period, and then Columbus was able to score on the man advantage. The difference in that game was special team and goaltending. Mm. That was the difference in the game. I think in catching the comments from Bruce Cassidy after the game, he felt like the team could have defended, and maybe Yaroslav Halak could have made a better play on the Wennberg goal that opened the scoring. All right, so fine, you're down 1-0.
The power play let him down.
You had opportunities on the man advantage, could not find the back of the net. Some of that was Merzlikens. He got a little bit of puck luck. But you still got, you're down one heading into the third period. They get one look on the man advantage, and they bury it. And that was the game.
Mark, you're up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. I got a couple of things on the Bees. First off, Torey Krug stepping up and showing some leadership on taking on a guy bigger than him. And I think at the end, probably gives him the edge in winning that fight. With that being said, does Sweeney and Nilly look at Krug and say, you know what? We can't let this kid walk. Yeah, he's deficiencies on defense, but the way he quarterbacks on power play and shows leadership on this team, we have to figure something out to keep this kid here. He's been a Bruin for life. Let's try and keep him there for life. And on Tuukka Rask, I know he made the decision not to attend the All-Star game, which I could care less about anyway, but the question on that is, now that he's on IR and was going to miss it anyway, is he exempt from the one suspension rule? One game suspension rule, guys.
It's my understanding that he is, as long as he misses a game.
As long as he doesn't play before
or after,
right? Yeah.
And he's on IR now. I don't know if he'll play Tuesday or not.
I think the expectation for most people is that we won't see him until after the break. Right.
So if that's the case, and as long as it's because of injury, which it is, then yeah, he will not be suspended.
Right. As far as
well, Torey Krug was the other issue that was brought up. Listen, the Bruins value Torey Krug. I think Torey Krug likes being here, but at the same time, it's about what is the number going to be and across how many years. If it's a number that fits for Don Sweeney and the Bruins, and Torey Krug is amenable to that, then he's going to stay here.
I mean, I heard, I think it was yesterday, even Felger softened his stance on Torey Krug. He actually thinks he's got value. Maybe not enough to pay him, but
he definitely does.
Well, I mean, it's like the Grinch's heart growing three sizes too big. It's like we all know the value that Torey Krug has here. It's just a question of dollars and cents. That's all it is. And how long and how much, and can they fit him here? And he says he wants to stay, says he's willing to give a little bit of a discount, but what a little bit means can vary from player to player.
So. I haven't heard that he said he's going to take a discount, but I have heard that he likes it here, and the Bruins certainly value what he brings, both in the room and on the ice, but you've got to make the numbers work.
617-779-0985. We can get to more of your calls coming up, and Ty Anderson will join us in studio coming up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Shoe Center fired!
The Hockey Show on your home of the Bruins, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
It is the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Coming up at the end of this segment, we'll give you a chance to go see the Bruins take on Vegas on Tuesday night over at the Garden. Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers with you, and now joined in studio by Ty Anderson of 98.5thesportshub.com. Welcome. What's going on? Good to see you, as always.
Same.
Care to chime in on the Bruins, the big bad Bruins not making an appearance? Or
I just think that at the end of the day, people have to get over what the past was and understand that they tried. They tried four different times to get him to go. He's a 19-year-old Swedish kid. He didn't want to go. What are you going to do? You're going to spend the whole night chasing him around? I was talking to a Bruin about this, and he said, listen, I get why people are mad. He says, but know that it wasn't for a lack of trying. And even the Columbus teammates hit the point where they were telling the Bruins, he's not going to fight. He's not going to do it, guys. So what are you going to do? You're going to be an idiot all night and chase this guy instead of trying to win the game? It was still a one-goal game for a long time, and they were in it. And people were saying, well, do something else. And the player I was talking to said, we don't really do that anymore. We're not going to go run their goalie because they hurt ours. Been here for a while. We don't do that anymore. So it's not for a lack of trying. And I think that it's created this discourse that I just don't agree with, that they're not tough, that they don't have any sack. No, I don't believe that at all. I don't. If you've watched this team, I don't think that you can yourself believe that, in my opinion.
But okay, so as we talked about, I understand. Okay, Bemstrom's not going to go, and you're saying okay, they're not going to run the goalie either. Other type of physical response?
I think they should have.
I'm with you. I mean, I wanted.
And it's not saying you just go run them over. I mean, it's not that. It's like when you got to play around the crease, and there's a loose puck there. Well.
Little extra whack, you know.
It's not a whack. It's just a little extra. I'm going for this puck, and if I run into the goalie, then so be it. Yeah, I think that is still part of the game.
I mean,
absolutely.
I mean, it's similar to the way you put it about the Bemstrom contact with Rask. Like, it's not necessarily intentional, but it's not necessarily
accidentally on purpose,
unintentional.
Right, right. You know, but if there's an opportunity around their crease to crash the net, absolutely. Absolutely. So I still think that is part of the game. So, I mean, maybe that's the old school of me. I don't know. But, I mean, I wish, and I think that there are a lot of people maybe around the organization who feel the same way.
Yeah, let me be clear that the player I talked to said that he himself thought they could have had a better response. But in terms of some of the suggestions that you've heard from people, wanted, I mean, it's...
It's not go and just take a stick to the head of the goaltender. Matthew Perreault talking about taking a stick to the head of, you know, the next time a guy comes near me, I'm just going to whack him across the head. No, it's just playing hard around their net. That's all.
A hard finish. You know, Charlie Coyle going to the net versus around
anything,
it.
Anything, anybody. I mean, it's not any one guy. It could be anybody. So, yeah, I think that there was something more to be done there. And then on the whole thing, you talk about the toughness. I wish Kevin Miller was in the lineup. I really do, because, I mean, he just brings a completely different element to this team. Could they be tougher? You could always be tougher, and I would love to see a little more size, as Judd was talking about off the air here a minute ago, and just attitude at certain times to go with it. But I think the team itself, as it is right now, when you look up and down the Eastern Conference, you know, who's quote-unquote tougher than them or more physical than them? The Islanders play a physical brand, okay, but I think that they're on par with that. Columbus plays a physical brand. I think they're on par with that. Maybe Washington has a couple of guys that, you know, you kind of look to as being maybe a little bit better, maybe a little bit higher than that, a little bit tougher than that. But there's nobody else, right?
I don't see anybody else besides Washington.
No, and I think, you know, just talking about two of those teams, the Islanders and Washington, I think there's a distinction. It's not just the style they play, but it's the type of player that comprises that roster. I mean, if you look at the Islanders, you got some big lumbering forwards. Hey, you got Anders Lee and Brock Nelson. You got some big, you know, tough characters. Washington, Ovechkin and Tom Wilson. You know, you can keep going. They've got some guys from side. Kuznetsov is a big player. But I think that there's a distinction that people have to make between toughness and style of play.
Toughness
and
is
type of player that is on your roster.
Toughness is winning battles. It's taking a hit to make a play. It's blocking a shot. It's you know, when you don't really want to, when you see a guy that's got, you know, you see Shea Weber taking a one-timer. I mean, how about some of the blocks that Nordstrom's had in the last couple of games? I mean, sacrificing himself to get down on some of these one-timers. I mean, to me, that's toughness, right? And just the winning of battles, the making sure that you're coming out on top more often than not, standing up for your team. It comes in different levels. It's not about fighting, right? We've already kind of that part of the game's kind of gone, but it's just about answering the bell or dictating, as we already said.
I think in a lot of ways we're talking more about, though, than the overall toughness of the team is the unity of the team. You don't question it. Other people do.
Well, that's
that, you know, if as
they question a lot of things,
they do. They're not always right. But, you know, that's ultimately what's being called into question here. When your goalie gets knocked out and people don't see, you know, a response from the rest of the team, people are questioning whether this team is sticking up for each other. And clearly that was not the case on Thursday when they played Pittsburgh. I mean,
they bought him a drum set.
Gave him a really nice bottle of wine.
Awesome. The drum set was awesome.
It is. It's a great drum set.
I wanted to play it. Yeah. I was like, man, I really want to play that drum set.
Not sure that's advisable for somebody who's coming off a concussion as to, you know, to
get the noise canceling headphones. It'll be fine.
Let's talk about some of the personnel decisions this week. Is it a coincidence that Brett Ritchie gets placed on waivers the day after that Columbus game?
I mean, if there's a fall guy, it's probably going to be him, right? If you look at the roster, who can get rid of? But also, I don't think that he was ever really safe. You know, like when Carson Kluman was ready to go, Brett Ritchie was the guy you looked at and said, okay, he's gone. It was never consistent enough. He would have a game where he looked good, and then the next night it kind of just wouldn't be there. The next week it wouldn't be there. So I kind of thought the writing was on the wall there. The Backus one is a surprising one, but Ritchie, I thought, was always on borrowed time once he couldn't necessarily find his fit. I think the worst thing that could have happened to him was scoring that goal in that first game because he was just never that player. And I think people thought, okay, wow, he might be who he was 2 or 3 years ago when he scored 16 goals. And he was never that guy. He never found his footing. He wasn't skilled enough to hack it with Krejci, and that third line fit was just never quite there, in my opinion.
What were the expectations for him? When they brought him in here, like, what did they envision as his role on this team? Because he never found a role on this team.
I think they were hoping he was going to be more like how he was a few years back when he played with Ben, but I think that he was always more Nola Chari than he was second liner. Like, he was kind of the backup version of a Nola Chari.
I would have taken Nola Chari.
Right.
I
think anybody would Nola take Nola Chari.
He brought it every game. You know, I mean, some games he couldn't quite get there because he was all banged up, but he brought that physicality every game. And when he was in the lineup.
And he was there on plays.
And that's really what it boils down to, is the lack of consistency from a guy like Brett Ritchie. They wanted a guy who could play 6'4", 220, who looked like that pretty much on a night-in, night-out basis. The Bruins gave him a long look with a lot of really good players. They gave him a chance. You know, you can make the argument that, oh, he got lost in the wash in Dallas because of all the coaching changes. Well, we're going to give him a really solid look with a lot of really good players. And he did not bring it on a consistent basis. And I think combine that with some guys who are starting to get healthy again, like Carson Kuhlman and Anton Bleed and some other guys, and you're getting late in the season, well, we've got a decision to make.
Well, other decision, as you mentioned, Ty, was David Backus placed on waivers yesterday. People have been clamoring for, you know, the last couple of, like, what are we going to do about this guy's contract? Can he, you know, can we trade it? Can we eat some of the money? You're up against the cap. I thought it was odd when they, you know, gave him a maintenance day the other day and he had only played two games in the last month. It seemed like something was up. And then the announcement yesterday, do we have it first before we even get into the effects that this has on this team going forward? Do we have any idea what to expect? Is Backus done? Is he going to report to Providence? Have we heard anything about that?
Well, it seems like he's going to report if he clears. Andy Strickland, who used to be close with him in St. Louis, said that the expectation is that he is going to, if he does clear, he's going to report and he's going to play his contract with the Bruins as long as he's here. So we'll see there. I could almost see him doing that. Like, it makes sense given his sort of mentality. But this felt like, in a way, it felt like Bruce just wanted to protect the player from himself. Listening to his quotes yesterday, it seemed like he really was afraid that Backus was going to get another concussion or fight or just do something that could really alter his life. And you combine that with the fact that he didn't really have a home in this lineup, and here we are. But I would expect that he would go down and play. I don't see him walking away from the game. I really don't. He'd forego all that money that he's due. So I think he goes down if he clears, which I expect he will.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think anybody's going to be jumping over themselves to claim the contract. I mean, even if you thought that Backus might have something left in the tank, I don't think you're going to risk that level of money on that at this point in the season.
Yeah, I mean, if you're a team, you just kind of wait until the offseason when you can have him for half price, or when they buy him out, you sign him for league minimum and hope that he can still play. But, I mean, I'm surprised they did this, to be honest with you. I thought this would be like, well, he's here, and then the summer comes, and now he's gone. I'm surprised they did this, but, again, I think that speaks to the sort of the roster limit and carving out every sliver of cap space you can between now and the deadline.
Do you know what the exact number is that they save?
They save a little, well...
Isn't it around a million?
It's a little over a million. I don't know if that's now prorated because of, the cap.
So people think that he goes down. Okay, well, that's $6 million off the cap. It's not. It's $1 million off the cap, give or take, right? So, I mean, they're still paying him everything, but it's $1 million that they save on the salary cap. It's not $6 million. So when people say, oh, now they get all this money. No, they don't.
Right.
They still don't. They're trying to find ways, Richie was at that. But then you bring up Kuhlman, and, he's on an entry level, right? So, that's a wash almost. So they save a little bit, but not $6 million.
Yeah, the dead cap is like 4.95. So it's 1.05 is what you save. If it's day one of the regular season, that's in burying that contract, that's what you get.
In addition to that, so the bean counters will tell you, so every day the salary cap is computed. So every day he's not on your roster will benefit you if you're trying to add some salary before the trade deadline. And we are close. The deadline is what? February 24th.
Didn't you tell me that Stephen Camper was sent down the other day?
He was on paper.
Just for like 24 hours, just to get him off the cap for the day.
They're trying to carve out as much space as possible.
Evan Gold, he's got his work cut out for him. He's their capologist. They've done quite a few of those moves, those paper transactions, and it makes sense when you look at how close they are to the cap right now. It's like their cap space the other day was like $70,000, and you're like, how is that possible?
Some teams have had to do that just to be able to ice the right roster on a night in, night out basis.
Yeah, I think about Toronto right now, right? With Morgan Riley being out, that kind of threw a whole wrench in their plans. So managing that is a huge part of it. And with Backus and Richie now, part of it is a wash, as Bob said, with Kuhlman. But it's just getting every nickel that you can for deadline. So maybe you add more than one piece if you have the room and if a team needs money. I think that these moves are totally to... Yes, part of it is getting these younger players in, but I think at the same time it's to not have roadblocks if you find a deal that really tickles your fancy.
So, obviously that's done with the intention of adding to this team at some point before the trade deadline. We'll, as we get closer to that, we'll see what becomes available. But you also have kind of, in the meantime, you mentioned Kuhlman getting healthy. Judd mentioned Bleed getting healthy a little bit earlier. There was talk after Richie got put on waivers this week that this is it. They're gonna bring up Brent Frederick, and he's gonna be the muscle on this team and all of that. Where do you think ultimately they do for the next month as far as that goes with some of those guys who are maybe kind of tweeners or haven't gotten a full time shot at this level yet?
With some of the younger players,
yeah.
I mean, I would imagine that Bleed is going to be the first guy up because they've talked about him so much. And that would make sense if you're looking for a fourth liner, an energy guy. Trent Frederick, if he comes up, I don't want him to come up to be a face puncher. I want to see if he can make plays with the puck. That's the biggest thing for me. He's still 21.
It's not about dropping the gloves.
Exactly.
It's about winning battles and being hard to play against.
Bob, he's got 100 minutes in the AHL this year.
I mean, if it happens, it happens. I mean, but it's about playing hard and being hard to play against. That's what it's... And if he's able to do that, then I'm all for it. If he's ready for that. I mean, if dropping the gloves comes along with it, that's fine. But it's just about being hard to play against and being physical and tough in certain situations. And they talk about Bleed as being a guy, Judd, you were talking about it the other day, as being a guy that he can instigate. Right? He's not a guy, he doesn't have to be prodded to instigate, to get under people's skin and really get in their face. That's the way he plays. So if that's what they're looking for, then that's kind of the direction that they'll go with a Frederick or a Bleed. But it's not about coming up and dropping the gloves every shift.
Because that's sort of how I feel, right? If he comes up and he does that, great. But if he's only playing 7 minutes a night because he can't play, what's the point?
It's not,
you don't need that. And one thing I'm curious about, and I'm curious your guys' opinion on this, is do you think they would give Stadnica a longer look here before the deadline to see if he can play?
Well, there's a couple schools of thought there, right? I mean, so Stadnica is still kind of raw and kind of growing, right? He's not quite physically mature yet. So if you're looking for a heavier presence in your lineup, especially come playoff time, then no. Then it would be Frederick would be the direction that you're going there. You know, I think Stadnica is highly regarded in this organization, is going to be a guy that they look to down the road. You know, see what happens with David Krejci. We'll see what happens with, you know, whatever down in the middle. Then I think he's a factor. Right now, this second, I think that they would go a little bit towards the Frederick direction. But it all depends on how they're playing, too. You know, if Frederick kind of hits a wall and isn't playing well, and all of a sudden Stadnica's playing great, then that changes some things.
I think it'll be fascinating to see what happens between now and February 24th. I could certainly see a scenario where a guy late in the season, into the playoffs, you bring up a guy like Jack Stadnica, and essentially that becomes your fourth line. And let's say you move Charlie Coyle to the right side with David Krejci and Jake DeBrusk, depending on what you can or cannot accomplish in the trade market. The way that Bruce Cassidy deploys his lines, the Corrali line is not your fourth line. He doesn't play him that way.
When they're playing well.
Exactly. So last year in the playoffs, they're deployed maybe about 13, 14, anywhere from 13 to 15 minutes per night. So a guy like Jack Stadnica in this scenario, hypothetically, would come up and play fourth line minutes, occasionally throw him out there, offensive zone opportunity with some younger talented wingers to be able to generate an offensive opportunity, and you hope at the same time he holds his own based on what the matchup is. But a lot of this is predicated on what the roster is going to look like between now and February 24th.
So I'm interested to see, you know, is some of these guys, look, you know, if you're going to be in the trade market and you're going to be not looking to move a lot off of your NHL roster too, some of these guys could wind up as part of those deals. Do they get showcases, right? Do they get, you know, a chance to come up and show what they got, because teams are going to want to see what they can do at the NHL level?
I think there's that, and I think that at the same time, if you're going to swing for the fences here, you want to see if Heinen and Bjork can separate themselves from the pack and prove that they can be here full-time. I thought that Bjork's game against Islanders, I believe that was Butch after the game, said he wasn't playing heavy enough. Well, they're going to have heavier games in the playoffs, so can he be a top six winger for you? They need to find that out. So I think they're going to use this time to see what the young kids can do, but also find out more about their actual roster and see if these pieces can be the pieces of a Stanley Cup contending team, because that is the expectation for this team.
And to Bjork's credit, he got the message the next game. Played a far different game. I remember we had a conversation with Bruce Cassidy prior to the game in Columbus, and the question was asked, this was before the interview, best game you've seen Anders Bjork play? He's like, maybe. He played a few, you know, when he first came up and had some opportunities playing with Bergeron and Marchand, he said there were a few games then that stuck out for him. But you can make an argument that the game that we saw in Philadelphia might have been his best game. Here's the problem. You do it one night, you got to be able to do it all the time.
Well, that's what I was going to say, is that we've seen that with young guys before, right? They get the message, and then the next two or three games, they disappear again. And it's like, how often do we have to keep reminding you of this? Because the good players are the ones that you don't have to remind. They're going to be there every night.
The other caveat with a guy like Anders Bjork, this is essentially his rookie season. He has never played a full campaign, ever. He got the two shoulder injuries in each of his first two pro years. He was playing a college campaign with Notre Dame. And for guys who are going through their first time through an 82-game season, that is a big adjustment both on and off the ice.
Ty Anderson, 98.5thesportshub.com. Thank you, as always.
Anytime.
It's playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing, and FanDuel is your place to bet on every game. Right now, new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. That's $150, win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks on an app that's safe, secure, and easy to use. What are you waiting for? Visit FanDuel.com/Fred and make your first bet an automatic win. FanDuel, America's number one sports book.
21 plus and present in Massachusetts. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Hope is here. Gambling helpline ma.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234.